With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And I suggest you shut up and show more football.
Come on, come on. We've done that then! Can we not knock it?
I am flabbergasted. I wouldn't even let him on the bus after the match. I get a taxi back to Manchester.
Again, please don't call me arrogant, because what I'm saying is true. I think I'm a special one.
When the seagulls follow the troll, it's because they think sardines will be thrown into the sea. Thank you.
Understand what I'm trying to get at. Yes, he was a great player. Yes, he was a wonderful leader. But he wasn't a magician.
Well, take him out, son. I mean that. Take him.
I'm Richard Keys.
I'm Andy Gray.
Nothing else. It's an accurate start.
There we go.
Which makes a change.
You can only go downhill from here.
If you're with us for the first time, thank you for joining. If you are a regular, thank you for being so. If you subscribe, and you can follow us on Insta and Twitter at Keys and Grey Pod, spell it out, all of it, Keys and A-N-D Grey Pod, you'll know going forward when the next episode is available. Usually Saturday mornings, pre-recorded Friday, which today gives us one or two little issues because we can't be specific about what's happening with the FA Cup, but I know you've got general thoughts on this that fly in the face of popular opinion. Yes.
Why?
Well,
we're right now in the middle of a pandemic.
That
in the UK couldn't be probably worse.
Agreed.
And I just think in these extraordinary circumstances.
Hold on, before you offer any thoughts on that subject, may I just point out this article that I'm looking at in The Sun today. And I hate saying that because I hate reading
it. Just say
and
that
I
paper.
Don't buy it. I don't.
She just said a tabloid.
But I look at it because others do, Andy. And on that basis, I need to, but I hate it. Anyway, COVID is speeding up the demise of the FA Cup. You don't see Premier League clubs forfeit 3 points.
No, you don't. But the difference between a Premier League fixture and an FA Cup fixture is the games that Aston Villa have got to rearrange. I think it's Newcastle and Man City, for different reasons, but Newcastle definitely for COVID-19 reasons. So they could play that game, Richard, in April. They could play that game in May. You cannot have an FA Cup tie scheduled for the third round of the FA Cup at the beginning of January and play it in March.
No.
It's not going to work.
Do we care anymore about the FA Cup?
Well, yes, we care. I care. But maybe it's just because I'm old and I'm a traditionalist. Traditionalist. And I do.
Say it again.
Traditionalist. I love the FA Cup because I played in it so many times and I won it. And I know the history of the FA Cup.
But it was different.
It was different. I agree with you. So, but that's not the issue for me as to how the importance of it. It's quite simply this. These are unique circumstances. It's a season that we hope we'll never see the likes of again. So we have to make difficult decisions and we have to do things we don't like. And I've said to you all along, for me, the FA Cup should have been suspended this year. And They should have concentrated.
Suspended or cancelled?
Cancelled. Suspended, cancelled.
Okay, well, let's be specific, because those two words are very different meanings.
I get that. Cancelled. You can't suspend it because you're never going to play
it. What about those teams that have played in it? What about the small clubs that rely on it for income? Whether it be TV income
other. But they're having to cope with no fans, which is the bedrock of their income. They don't have a fan. They haven't had a fan.
Not
in
if
their
I'm
grounds.
Marine. If I'm Marine and I'm on television, I'm looking at £180,000. That keeps my club afloat for 5 years.
Okay, so what happens if 6, 8 Tottenham players go down with COVID after the game?
Then I feel a responsibility of sorts if I'm at Marine, but it's not going to bother me too much.
It's not going to bother you
going forward.
But it's going to bother football.
Yes,
it's going to bother football. What the Premier League have set up this so-called bubble. Okay, that surrounds the Premier League clubs, although some of the boys have been naughty, we know that. So they've set up this bubble that is really under threat this weekend, I think. Really under threat.
You say some of the boys have been naughty. No, some of the boys, Andy, have been thoughtlessly selfish.
That's another way of putting it.
They have. We only know of a certain number because they've exposed themselves.
Yeah.
But they won't be the only ones.
Of course they're not.
They really won't. And...
No, there'll be other ones with more sense who say, listen, we're having a little party here, but whatever you do, nothing goes on social media.
That's not more sense. That's equally selfish.
Yes, but it's still, they've got more sense than to put it out in the social media.
Yes, but it doesn't help. In the bigger picture is that if you are seen to be, as footballers are, special right now, then you have to act as such.
Yeah,
you cannot afford to go around thoughtlessly.
Nope.
Infecting and spreading in the way that they have been. It is ridiculous. I mean, outside of the Premier League, there are huge issues already in the Championship
League.
I've said
that as well. And why then combine them? Why take the risk of combining these, a league that's supposed to be protected? And then at a time, Richard, now fine, in the summer, when, you know, and the sun was out in April, May, and the game was cancelled then and it didn't play. That was fine for people. They were outside. They were in the sunshine. They could go in the gardens. You know, they could do things. But now, it's the middle of winter. It's freezing. It's pouring with rain every other day. Sometimes, well, we're told there might not be any snow in the UK for another 30 years, but it'll be snowing somewhere. And they're locked in homes. And one of the things that keeps people going is the fact that there has been Premier League football every day.
I couldn't agree more.
Every day. And it's not a bind. Sometimes hard for people like us who work on it. Because we are working every day. But we're lucky to be working every day. And that's what I'm saying. So what are we going to do? Do we risk taking that away from people whose mental health should be a cause for us all?
I think the majority of footballers would agree. I think there is a minority. But unfortunately, it only requires a very small minority to cause problems. Mm. Who selfishly set about wanting to enjoy themselves with no care about the sort of things that you've just said. I agree with you, but I fear we are heading for a lockdown. Oliver Dowden, Culture Secretary. I mean, please. I can't believe I've mentioned him either. Has warned football, be careful. Because So Sean Dyche here. This hasn't yet got traction. It will, I think.
It will, right.
Vaccination is the way forward, says Sean. I appreciate some people will say, why should footballers get vaccinated? But 20 Premier League clubs with, say, 100 people vaccinated, the payback to the NHS would be considerable. He's got a point.
Mm-hmm.
He has got a point.
I think it's a really difficult one. If you form an opinion one way or the other, somebody will find it, and somebody will come up with Sean and say, what makes you think a footballer should be vaccinated and so-and-so should be vaccinated?
Well, of course, but then stop and think on, because as he goes on to say, if you vaccinate, you don't need to keep testing, and that money could be used for a much better cause, while football would stay a competitive industry rather than one that might end up skewed because of players missing games. That's not so much the issue
for me. No,
it's not for me
either.
I think the saving of the money that's required to buy the tests, or those tests could sensibly be used elsewhere. I think he's got a point. I don't think we should immediately dismiss this and say, how very selfish. I don't think it is that.
Sean Dyche is not like that anyway, Richard.
No.
Dyche is nothing like that. He wouldn't do that without having thought this through and given his opinions on that. Listen, I might be being selfish, but I really do think we should do everything we can to keep the league going. I'd hate to think we would have to have a circuit breaker in, but after this weekend, I think after these games are played against these lower league sides who were not 100% sure whether the testing's been good, whether it's accurate, whether how many have got it, what the bubbles have been like, if any. And we're risking the Premier League then being not decimated. Well, decimated it could, actually. It could end up decimated.
Very much so.
I think that's a risk too much.
As an example, the Women's Super League, which is counting the cost of Christmas trips to Dubai, made by 3 Arsenal internationals and 4 Manchester City players. Now, I don't want to be a prophet of doom or spread scare stories, but I do think there'll be a price to pay for those that have recklessly spent their Christmas and New Year in Dubai. It's like the Wild West there, Andy. You and I know, living in Qatar here, that every precaution is taken to protect those of us that live here, including this outrageous suggestion that's been floated in the UK that people arriving in the country should be tested before they actually get to the borders of the UK and maybe go into lockdown when they get there.
You mean like we've been doing here for 9 months?
Yes, exactly like that.
Well, funny enough, I was playing, I don't know if it was you, but when we were playing golf on Thursday, I think I was talking to Nigel de Jong, DJ, about this, and we were talking about UK, and he's obviously, because he was there and played with City, he sees all the headlines coming out. He said, what's the problem, Andy? I said, well, I said that part of the problem is, from day one, they've never tested anyone on arrival into the UK. Anyway, you're kidding.
But you know, the bigger problem than that is the Daily Mail. Huh? And it's ridiculous.
I thought you liked the Daily Mail.
Not at all.
Is it up there with the Sun?
Well, they have the same views. But one is owned, of course, by the mastermind behind this week's events in the States. But don't get me on that.
No.
No, their ridiculous attitude that it is an imposition. That we're giving up freedoms if we have to wear a... Heaven forbid, people should be thoughtful enough to wear a mask and protect others from themselves. Mm-hmm. In the UK, they've had that totally wrong. We wear a mask to stop ourselves getting infected. No, you don't. You wear a mask to help others. You might be infected. You might be asymptomatic. Just think. But they don't. It's an imposition, say the Daily Mail. I mean, please. They're paying the price, sadly. They're paying the price of just being dismissive. I look at this, another little tale from John Cross in his column today. BBC local radio has a cult following among football fans. Yeah, it does. They provide biased commentary.
Oh, right.
For and on
do
behalf
really?
Of their... Well, all the way back to BRNB.
Oh, local radio.
Tony Butler. Tony, in the days when he used to have his Villa
theme tune. Tom Ross playing what in a BRNB.
Right, but even better than that. I mean, I've sat with Tony many times where... We lived in a different world and information was hard to come by.
Yeah.
So he would get a call from the match reporter to say, hello, Tone, Villa have scored. Hold on. And then he would go to his Villa theme tune, dun, 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 whatever it was. It's worked again. It's worked his magic. Villa have scored. That was all part of the magic in those days. David Icke, a typical grey leap, a typical grey header. A typical grey goal. I remember all these things. But anyway, BBC bosses have ordered a crackdown and stopped local stations from travelling all over for fear of catching the virus and bringing it back to the studios. Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised it's taken that long to think about that. BBC Radio Norfolk and Leicester have both put up pictures or posts about them having to stay behind and do commentaries from the TV.
Oh,
you mean just like it's been done at TalkSport and many other outlets for years and years. And by the way, TV as well.
Yeah.
I mean, all these commentaries don't come necessarily always from sight. How many commentaries have you
off
done?
Tube, as
off
call
tube,
it.
As
off
we call
tube,
it.
As we call it.
How many?
You sit in a little booth with a co-commentator watching a TV screen. I've done plenty, thankfully. A lot fewer than a lot of other people, because I was normally on site, thank goodness, when I was doing that. But, and it's a difficult operation, that, because you're only seeing what's on the TV, whereas when you're there, you see the whole picture. You can be looking to your right to see what's happening there, you can be looking to your left off screen, whereas if you're sitting with a little TV, all you can commentate on is what's in front of you. It's a much more difficult skill.
If the pictures go, shut up.
Yes.
Because you will blow the myth that you're not there.
Yeah, that's true.
we've lost commentary. Right. In line with a conversation I'd like to continue with our guest today, I want to run this past you.
Go on.
Andy Morrison, who used to play for Manchester City, now the manager of Connors Quay, big mate of Big Sam's, played for him, I believe, at Blackpool. Headline here, Jose Mourinho and Pep Guardiola would struggle to turn West Brom around, but Sam Allardyce can. Now, I sat looking at that this morning and I thought, that's in line with many of the thoughts that I have... Mm-hmm. shared or argued with or on occasions agreed with you about. Ancelotti, I think he could. I think he could. He's an organiser.
Yeah, and the Italian psyche through the years that Ancelotti grew up was always organisation, defensive stability and strength, and then what from there. Yeah, yeah.
Mourinho, I think he could. I don't think he'd want to.
No.
But I think he could.
Yeah, he could. It's organisation. He's a you know, he is a super organiser. He's the number one.
Van Gaal.
No. Struggle.
No?
Struggle, I think.
Fraudier, sorry, I always say that, don't I?
I can't believe that. One of the most successful coaches in world football. And
when he wins the Champions League without Messi, I will not call him Fraudiola anymore.
Okay.
So when he talks to people rather than talks down to people, I will pay him the same respect.
Okay.
So Guardiola, why do we all think that Guardiola couldn't?
Do we?
Let me ask the question. Do you think Guardiola could go in at West Brom and keep them up?
Wow. What a question to help me with on a Friday morning. The simple answer would be for me is just to sit here and say, yes, I think he probably could. But
you wouldn't believe that.
No,
to be
no. I'd need to be convinced. Whereas I could sit here and say, could Sam Allardyce do it? Yes. Organise a team that's as poor as West Brom and get them, scrap them enough points to stay up. Yes, he could. As we've talked about the others, I think even Klopp is probably of that mindset, but he could go in there.
Agreed.
And probably do that. But I don't know. I don't know with Pep. Pep's skills are about creating entertaining.
Why did you say Klopp and then follow that up with Pep?
Sorry. Forgive me.
We don't call him Jürgen, do we? Let's agree to agree, we'll call him Guardiola.
Okay, well, and Guardiola's skills seem to be much more of the flamboyant, attacking, possession-based football. Well, that's great if you've got players who can do that, but West Brom don't. So could he then organise a side? Could he turn West Brom players into Manchester City players in 6 months?
Could he?
Well, no.
Ever?
Well, I don't know.
Not six months, no.
I mean, you have to look at Leeds. They came up and...
title winner, three-time Premier League winner. We'll introduce you to him shortly. Yeah.
Leeds came up with a way of playing football with players who, if you looked around and took them at face value, they wouldn't get in many top six sides in the country, would they? Maybe Bamford, maybe the kid in midfield. But not many.
Not many, no. Okay. Not many.
I think one or two would. But what I'm saying is, Richard... He's come up with that, but he's been there 3 years. Mm. It's taken him 3 years to get there. Now look at in the Premier League. Have they got the worst defence? I think they might have the worst defence in the Premier League. They've scored as many goals as they've conceded. He's like a flamboyant manager.
He's
he wants
more
to go on the front foot.
Intensity than he is craft and guile, though, isn't he?
Yeah, but he's very rigid in what he does, and it's taken him 3 years. These players know exactly what to do under Bielsa now. So if you put Bielsa into West Brom, could he get West Brom up? Who was he? The third best coach in the world voted this year, Marcello Bielsa. Could the third best coach in the world go into West Brom right now and save them? I don't think
so. Well, you see, this
not
is my point. So what makes a super coach? Does a super coach arrive at that elevated stage of a career because he's been winning things with the very best tools that are available? Or is Sam Allardyce, because he can do what few others can, which is breathe life into a football team almost at death's door?
Yeah, you talk to players who have worked with Sam Allardyce and they all come back and say this perception of him about him being a dinosaur and not wanting to play football, not doing this, is so wrong, so ahead of his time. He was his young coach and he continues to be at the forefront of technology and everything that goes around in football, stats, everything. So what makes a great coach, a super coach? Some are fortunate that they are given the best tools to work with. Guardiola, obviously at Barcelona, the best tools. Bayern Munich, the best tools. Manchester City, the best tools. So he's fortunate in that respect. Whereas I think you look at Jurgen Klopp, He came up Mainz, was it he started? Mm-hmm. Worked his way then to Dortmund mm-hmm. and locked horns with Bayern Munich and was, you know, they were clubbing each other to death every league, every season. So he earned his right to go there. He worked his way up through. He learnt his craft coming up to put him there. Mourinho, Porto, what he did with Porto was fantastic to win the Champions League as it was then. And then got the gifts at Chelsea. You know, he was given a really good squad that had finished second. It was added to. But I think Mourinho has elevated himself. He's definitely in there. So you need luck. Fergie, you'd have to say Fergie was a super coach. Have to. But he's worked his way up from the likes of St Mirren. Falkirk, was it? St Mirren. Aberdeen. Bad United side. And look where he took that club, that team. Those teams, because he made a few of them. That's a super coach. Now,
can I throw another one
in? Go on.
Chris Wilder.
Yes. I mean, what Chris has done with Sheffield United, beggars belief.
Northampton, 100 points
yeah.
plus.
Yeah.
I mean, every club he's been at, he's all right, they're bottom right now.
Richard, at Sheffield United, with nothing.
Yes, granted. And many times you've said, in adversity, you find out more about yourself.
Yes, you do.
And I did text him the other day, and I used that line. I said, Andy at this point would say, and you know, he was hugely appreciative of that because I think that probably struck a chord with him.
Mm. He'll be learning more about himself and his club and his players.
But to take
in the last
Sheffield
6 months,
United as he did into the Premier League mm. and then not just establish it, but become something yeah. that teams didn't want to play. Mm-hmm. So do we too easily attach the label of super coach to those that win?
Listen, when he came up last year, Chris, and he took his team to where he took them, and who knows where they had finished, where they would have finished without the pandemic interrupting the season, because they never quite picked up after it.
No,
right?
No.
So who knows where they might have finished. But that's what he was doing for three quarters of the season is better than what Marcelo Bielsa's doing with Leeds.
Yeah.
Because he had more points by now.
Yeah.
He was higher up the league. He was in the top six most of the three quarters of the season. He was in the top six, seven, eight. Dropped a little. But look at Bielsa getting all the plaudits for the way he's playing. And they're bottom half of the table. Hugely entertaining. I love watching them. They are a breath of fresh air. But would that get you success? Will that win you a Premier League title? I don't think so.
Would Sam Allardyce, Chris Wilder, I was going to throw Claudio Ranieri in there for good reason. We're about to discuss him. Would these guys, would Sam have success with a big club?
Well, you ask Sam that, he will say undoubtedly yes.
No, I asked you.
I'd have to say yes. I think if you give an intelligent man, an experienced coach who knows football inside out, which Sam Allardyce does, you gave him the tools to work with at the top level, would he make a success of it? I think he really would make a success of it. Because I think he would combine what he's learnt from scrapping it and locking horns. I mean, what he did at Bolton was extraordinary.
Well, some of the players that he coached and managed.
This is what I'm saying. This is why people, annoys me when people go on about Allardyce. He's just this. Look at that. You're right. The people that he had there, the players that he had there.
Djorkaeff
and Campo. So many, many really good players. Nicholas Anelka went to Bolton and played for Sam. You know, these players don't go and play for
Hierro.
Hierro, yes. I mean, it was just, he did an unbelievable job.
Well, let's
there.
Extend this. Our guest today, a three-time Premier League winner, twice at Chelsea, famously at Leicester, under Claudio Ranieri,
yeah,
who's been round the block a few times.
Absolutely. And is still going.
Has he earned, still going, Sampdoria.
Sampdoria.
As Paul Elliott would say. Has he earned the label of super coach? And how on earth did he take ragtag and bobtail and win a Premier League title?
I have no idea.
Our guest is the German international centre-back. I'm really looking forward to spending time with him again. Robert Huth. Robert, my friend, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, big man.
Good morning, yeah. How's everyone?
Sehr gut, danke.
Sehr gut. Your German has improved since last time I saw you. So.
Let me tell you a story, Andy. Real time, it's 9 a.m. UK.
Right.
So I spoke to Rob this week. I said, can you join us? He said, yes. But could we use WhatsApp? Because the phone doesn't work very well at home.
Yes.
I've just realized in the message you just sent me was, Yeah, phone will work, I'll go downstairs. What he was looking to do was join us from his bed, not bothering his backside to get up, make the effort to go downstairs. And there we go.
I can't believe that.
You're exactly right as well, but I'm standing by the window now. So I've got
Oh, yes.
Goodness me. Fully clothed, I hope.
Apologies, Mrs. Smith. It was our fault.
Yes. Apologies to the neighbours.
No problem. Gets me out of bed anyway. That's a good thing.
Rob, we were just discussing super coaches.
Yeah.
And obviously, Claudio came up. And I said to Andy, how on earth did he take Ragtag and Bobtail, an old English schools programme, in case you don't know. How did he take that group at Leicester to a title win? Does he deserve the label super coach?
I don't know about that. I mean, he had a fantastic career, no doubt. But the sort of thing that happened at Leicester certainly was the setup behind the scenes. Was second to none. Was up there with the best I've had. You know, we had Craig Shakespeare as an assistant, who pretty much did everything from day one. Even when Nigel Pearson was still there, he sort of did loads of his work, his setup. He planned the weeks, the months of training. And Claudio sort of just fitted in as a figurehead when he first came in. Not to take anything away from sort of his man management skill, but the club was already set up, if that makes sense.
So do you think you could have won that, Robert, without Craig Shakespeare?
I think he was massive for us, both as a person and as a coach. He kept us level-headed. He kept us pushing on. Mm. I've even given more credit for the time that we're sort of struggling with relegation. You know, it's very easy sometimes to sort of accept your fate and sort of just plot through the season and get relegated, but he never let it go. But just to answer your question, I don't think we would have done that. I think he played a massive part in it, yeah.
Do you think, it's a daft question in many ways, Rob, but was staying up almost as satisfying or more so than winning the title?
For me, it was, because I've played in teams where we've been in better sort of league positions, but the sort of atmosphere was a lot worse than it was at Leicester. And at one point, I don't remember the extra sort of point difference, but, you know, we looked all back down.
Oh, you were gone, yeah.
And I'm sure he probably said it on your program that we would have been relegated, but, that was just an amazing achievement, you know. Like I said, people give up in sport, and I've seen it. I've seen other players do it, and in games where it goes against them, it's very, very easy to have an excuse and just say it wasn't all year or the referee was against us and all this sort of nonsense. But that was an amazing achievement, and then we even finished at a decent sort of league position. If you look at it,
I think I can guarantee you, Rob. I can guarantee you, we said more times they are down than we did they're going to win it.
Oh, I never said once they were going to win it until they did. Rob, answer me this. What on earth made you think that moving to Leicester and the turn of that year when they were looked all but dead and buried, what made you think that was a good career move?
To be honest, I didn't have a choice.
Oh, right.
I wasn't a flair player. There weren't many clubs sort of, queued up to sign me. That's the sort of the honest truth of it, really. I had a choice of going to the Championship or going to Leicester. And that was it, really. It wasn't a conscious choice by myself. I just fancied playing in the Premier League. I think I was 31 or just turning 31 that season. And I thought, give it another go, but it wasn't a choice of mine. It was either that or go down to the Championship.
Don't downplay your contribution or what you took to a team. I mean, you've watched Mourinho work firsthand. You played for Joachim Löw, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
I mean, on that point, why has he never taken a club job, do you think, Löw?
I think it's very comfortable with the German FA. I think the workload is a lot easier being a national coach. Initially, obviously, worked under Klinsmann as well, so you've got loads of sort of experience in terms of being a number two. So he knew how to hire a number two for the big occasion. Don't forget, we got to the to the finals of the Euros, semi-finals of the World Cup, and then the final he won it, 2014. So he's got loads of experience. But I think the key for him is, he just got now, he's got brilliant assistants. Hansi Flick was there with him when they won the World Cup and got to all the semi-finals and finals. And he's obviously gone to do brilliant things with Munich now. But I think there's a difference in terms of managing a national team. Just like I just mentioned, the workload, you've got a really short time of space to work with players. You get to pick the best players, which is not always the case at a club level. And management, you sort of have 2 weeks away, international break. Every player knows that lost the deal, they have to win two games to qualify. It's very sort of, it's an easier setup than a club level for me.
Robert, do I get the impression that you think that part of being a great coach, a super coach, isn't just about having the best players? It's so vitally important that you get your right number two.
Yeah, I mean, the number two needs to take everything, doesn't he? He needs to take the praise. He needs to get the abuse of the players without getting involved. That's such a key moment. I mean, the abuse I've shouted at number twos.
I've been there.
They should never really pick up the phone to me. But it's just like by the end of the training was gone, it was all forgotten. But had I said anything like that to the manager, my frustrations and all that sort of stuff, I would have probably just been sacked there and then. It's vital that it needs to be the right chemistry for sure.
I want to come back to that, but before then, probably the most significant question of the day. Did you ever see Löw pick his nose or scratch his bollocks?
I mean, scratching his bollocks, I don't know.
I did.
Not in person, I haven't anyway. But yeah, picking his nose, I think it's one of those nervous reactions you do when you're under pressure, isn't it? Right? Doesn't make for good viewing, does it?
No.
Look, you say you'd have got sacked for the views and the thoughts that you had. See, I see that differently. I think that's probably your frustrations, your anger, your thoughts, your contributions. That's what drove Leicester to a title. Isn't that the truth?
Yeah. Oh, for sure, yeah. I mean, we've got all massively driven individuals at Leicester or at any club. But I think my point was, it's the way you delivered your frustrations rather than...
Fair point,
Your frustration. There's a way of doing it. And I think sometimes when you lost a game and you feel, you feel injusted by or whatever, you just need to let it out, basically. And the manager isn't the best place for that,
Certainly if he's five inches smaller than you and you're towering over him, no, that's not good.
Exactly, yeah. But, do you know what I mean? Sometimes you just need to let rip and just get it all out and call people all sorts of names and then it's all done with. But yeah, the manager isn't the place. I think that for me anyway, I've been growing up as the manager was the sort of hierarchy of the top of the hierarchy. So
yes, respect.
For me,
I'm with you. There's a respect there that school teachers and police officers and hierarchy should have. But who were the others in that dressing room, Rob, that you could rely on, knowing that you would get 110% weekly and the same attitude?
I could guess some of them, I think.
Yeah, I could. But maybe there's a quiet one somewhere that we didn't expect. Yeah. Who were the forceful characters, whether it be noisily or from behind the scenes?
Obviously, Kasper was massive for us, both vocally and in terms of performances. And I think in terms of reliable performances, probably Ulloa that didn't really get that recognition because obviously Vardy scored all the goals. Okazaki played a massive part in winning it. But when Vardy, certainly towards the end of the season, when Vardy got injured and Leo had to play, he turned up.
Yeah,
he dispatched the penalty in the last minute, 93rd minute. Against West Ham, when we were winning 1-0 and we just needed someone to come on and hold the ball up. I mean, he couldn't wish for a more reliable player and person, really sort of down to earth, and just did his job. Sometimes you know, as players, we want to do sort of the fancy stuff and get recognised. But he knew his job, and he was very, very good at it.
So we're talking Ojoa, aren't we?
Yeah,
Rob.
Yeah,
we're talking Ojoa. Yeah. Just to clear that up for people. Yeah,
I don't probably pronounced it wrong, but so he was huge, and obviously the obvious ones was Kasper, the likes of myself. Wes was massive. Vardy was, you know, he's a big character in the team. But like I said earlier, it is more about having the right players than having the best players at every position. And that's what happened with Leicester. We just had the right players, the right mix, and it just fitted at the right time.
Are you surprised, Wes? Wes, Rob, are you surprised the fact that when Leicester, when you won the title, everyone thought, that's it, that's a one-off, it'll never happen again. Leicester, they'll now be top 10, maybe 11, 12, 13. That'll be as good as it gets. How surprised are you what Brendan Rodgers has done and where he's taken them again? Are you surprised? Rob?
I am surprised in terms of when we first won the league, obviously. The first couple of transfer rounds were really poor. I think the first sort of five or six players that we bought, they were sold within either 6 months or 12 months.
Yeah.
If not, you know, maybe 2 years later, the longest they stayed. So that was a real learning curve for Leicester because all of a sudden we were in the limelight and we had money to spend and players wanted to come to us and all that sort of stuff. But I think they bought really, really sort of badly. But am I surprised with Rodgers? No, because I had him at Chelsea when I was just coming through. I think, he was an under 18th or 19th coach, and he was exceptional then. All the younger kids that trained him, it was just like, you know, praising him, his training, his setup. I've trained a couple of times with him when I got bumped from the first team or Jersey, so when I was on the bench of the new American squad. So I think he's brilliant. I think he's a top manager.
As an important rider to that, not so much are you surprised that he's having success, and Andy and I are huge fans, but I always say Brendan's issues are that perhaps he's a little verbose, flowery. Are you surprised that Vardy and Schmeichel, who are not really that type, have actually bought in to what he's doing?
I think that's a really straight up answer. You know, when you know that someone's doing their job properly and is doing it right, you buy into it. And clearly that's the case there, isn't it? I was the same, like, Kasper's a very strong character, so is Vard. But I've spoken to them since he's joined, and we've spoken with Kasper not so long ago, and he says they love it. And don't be fooled by his interviews. By no means is he a pushover.
Yeah.
He's got very, very high standards, you know, and if you don't do it, like you've seen, he's dropped players before, he will drop players. But obviously when you step up to the media sort of after the game, you put on a bit of a brave face, but by no means is he a pushover.
Can they keep him, Rob? I mean, we talk.
Sorry?
Can they keep him, Leicester? What I'm saying is, we're talking about it, like, I think he's done brilliantly wherever he's gone. He's done a fantastic job. He continues to do so at Leicester. So is Leicester his limit? Or will he be happy there?
I think, naturally, I think if you're a manager, you want to manage the top clubs. And at the moment, realistically, without putting Leicester down, they aren't. On the other side, I mean, where's a better place? You know, they've got the right finances, he's been backed. The club going only up at the moment. So it would take something massive for Brendan to leave.
Yeah.
And who's to say he's not going to win a cup,
yeah,
or something like that? Just sort of, he's got a bit of trophy behind him just to sort of get more back.
You know, I'm going to jump on that. Who's to say he's not going to win a cup? So you've actually said winning the league again is not possible.
Well, at the moment, you look at realistically, you know, no, absolutely not. They're going to give it a go, and I'm sure they will. But I'd be stupid to say that Leicester's going to win the league with Man City with Klopp.
By the way, you would have been more stupid 5 years ago when you were playing to have said that. That's why I never said it.
I've got the answer to the other question. The other question you posed: where's better, Chelsea?
For what reason?
Well, for Rodgers to better himself, I'm looking around at where. I think, was offered Arsenal before Arteta said no because he felt he was in a better place. Not sure that's still the case. Not sure Arsenal's coming up. But there is a lot of speculation about the job Frank's doing. I hope Chelsea throw everything behind Lampard.
Me too.
I really do. But if they didn't, Chelsea?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm with you. I think the transfer window is a massive indication of what Chelsea's future is going to be like with Lampard or without, you know, whether they're going to back him again or whether they're just going to say, you know, this is it, son, you're going to have to sort of get through it to the end of the season. Possibly. I mean, I think with Leicester, it's slightly less pressure for Brendan in terms of, you know, performances, and he can lose a game here and there without being too scrutinised. With Chelsea, it's the opposite, isn't it? They're a massive club now. They, you know, every draw, every loss get analysed. But I mean, he started at Chelsea. There's no sort of argument against it, isn't for him to come back. But again, are there more other sort of
managers
out there that Chelsea would probably go for as well? Yeah.
Yes, there are. Listen, enough about him. What are you up to? I know that England's the base, you said. Why, and why have you not got yourself back involved?
I'm studying in sporting directorship at Salford Uni, which is obviously Manchester way.
Really? Great.
It's a 2-year course. And I'm just doing it basically just to, because I feel like I have to. I don't just want to get into the game based on name or anything like that. I think education is important to me. And I've got another 6 months, and then hopefully after that, I get back into the game.
In England, or are you looking at going home?
Anywhere. I mean, beggars can't be choosers, as they say. You know, it's a important job, and I think in football you just gotta whatever comes your way, gotta grab it and make it work. We are easy as a family. I mean, I left here for 20 years now in the UK, so for me, I'm easy. We can move to Germany, we can move to Qatar, we can move anywhere.
You would be very welcome here, my friend.
I'm
going to say thanks for joining us, but two questions to go with, right?
Go on.
Here's the first.
Yep.
What is the best part about being a German?
Ooh. My efficiency. Efficiency. Yeah.
Okay. Efficiency. Okay. Okay, so inevitably, the other end of the spectrum, what is the worst part about being a German?
Oh, I'm sure you can name a few, can't you?
Yeah, I can. What about you?
Yes.
The worst part? Well, is putting the towel down on the way down the sun. 6 o'clock in the morning, is that one of them?
I can't believe that was in my mind. That was your one. Nick in the sunbeds early in the morning. Yes.
It's great. It's great to catch up, Rob. I'm sorry we can't get you back more frequently at the minute, but we're all in the same world.
Yeah.
Hopefully, trust me, we'll get you back on BeIN Sports. You're always very welcome. It's great to talk again. He's always such good company.
He's a great lad, isn't he?
I mean, he's so dry.
Yeah.
Get into areas here that we don't want to, but
no.
What do we call it? Stereotyping or... But he is German, isn't he? I mean, he said it himself. His efficiency.
I know, it's just brilliant.
But he also has a wonderful way about him.
Yeah, he has.
Fantastic.
See, I hadn't met him really until he came here to Qatar to work with us on BeIN Sports. And I really enjoyed his company when he was here.
I'll guarantee you, the moment you met him, right, I'll bet going through your mind was, now I know why they want it.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. The mentality of the boy is huge, strong. Huge personality.
He was the leader of the
huge
gang,
personality.
I think, don't you?
Yeah, the ones he mentioned, I knew, you know, Kasper, Wes, Vardy.
Ujoa was a surprise.
Ujoa, but they needed that. I meant to ask him about Okazaki, but how he took it, because every time he played the little guy, he kept getting taken off. And I'd say to you, wouldn't I, look, 60 minutes, they're getting Okazaki off now. It was like a 60-minute footballer.
Yeah.
It was told, go out there and absolutely run your nuts off, and then we'll take you off after 60, 65 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, what a contribution he made that day. Or that day, that
From
season.
From a previous generation, Mickey Hazard, who probably got to around about the 60-minute mark and was always hooked.
Was making
especially
a bit like
Chelsea,
that.
Yeah. Yeah, John Hollins was his boss at Chelsea, and John used to talk about having to feed him with Mars bars at halftime to keep him going.
Good. Excellent.
Anyway, there we go. I hope you've enjoyed. Thank you for your company. As I've said earlier, if you want to subscribe, we would greatly appreciate that. If you know someone that likes podcasts and wants better than they're currently listening to, please steer them in our direction. We would be delighted about that. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Keys and Grey Pod. Keys, A-N-D, Keys and Grey Pod. And we will very much look forward to spending time with you at this time next week.
Correct.
In the meantime, stay safe.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.